Blog Talk Radio.
Peace and blessings, everybody. This is Queen Tahira. You're listening to Tuesday Nights with Queen Tahira and Dr. James Jones. Tonight's discussion is going to be on the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad. I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty, so I just want to thank you in advance for your patience as we get started here with libations. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
Praise and thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Alua Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ias, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs. Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos. Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe-o. Ashe-o. Welcome to the discussion and the build session, everybody. This is Queen Tahira, Tuesday nights with Dr. James Jones. Peace, Dr. Jones. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Queen. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm okay, out and about, driving a little bit. How did you want to proceed tonight? I wasn't really sure if you wanted to play the piece or how do you want to do this tonight?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, it might be better if we did play the piece so everybody could at least hear it, those who didn't get a chance to look at it through the week.
Okay, then. Let me go ahead and pull it up. How's your week been going so far?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm real good.
Good, good. Okay, guys, give me a second here. I'm going to go ahead and get this piece loaded up, and then we're going to play it and check it out, and hopefully folks will build around it, and we'll get the discussion started. Thank you for listening. I'll be right back. Dr. Jones.
Yes, ma'am.
While I pulled the piece up, can you talk a little bit about what made you want to have this particular discussion tonight and what brought Brother Khalil to the forefront?
Okay, certainly. The reason that this piece stands out to me is that actually when you're talking about some of the landmark moments in Black nationalist thought, this is one of those moments. This is one of Brother Khalid Abdul Muhammad's three top moments where he's invited on the Phil Donahue show. And he goes on there and in many ways dismantles Phil Donahue and many of the misconceptions, I guess we can call them, that are undergirding American politics and how we should proceed as far as a group of people, a race in addressing American politics and where we belong in this larger discussion regarding American politics. In addition to that, Khalid Abdul Muhammad was at one moment Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's right-hand man. And there's a speech that was given at King College, which is one of his other moments, where he went on a, he did what Khalid does. Anybody who heard Khalid would recognize that speech as being kind of standard fare. Well, Minister Farrakhan ends up putting him out, basically, and Khalid Abdul Muhammad's stature actually grows from that moment forward, and he eventually becomes the head of the New Black Panther Party, I believe, and works with those brothers, especially down here in Texas. I want to say that he was from Galveston, Texas, if my mind serves me correctly. So that's one of the reasons he's an individual that I most certainly admire for his strength, for his courage, and his intellect as well. And he's also one of the brothers that met an untimely death. Many people have asserted that Brother Khalid was actually murdered. Others have said that there was some other health issue that led to it. But nevertheless, he is one of our soldiers who's transitioned to be with the elders. And he's a voice that we should all have heard. And we should all remain committed to making sure he's never silenced. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, I see a lot of similarities between him, his story, and Brother Malcolm's story, in being that, one, they weren't afraid to take on the status quo. Two, you know, they were bold enough to stand on their own laurels and their own ethics and morals, and without, I guess, risk or fear of consequence. And we really do, that's, I think that's what's missing with a lot of the revolutionaries that we see nowadays, is that they have a certain amount of fear of what may or may not happen to them, or what may or may not come to fruition from them speaking out. So I'm going to go ahead and play this piece by Dr. Khalid Watts. I'm still trying to locate the actual document, Dr. Jones. I apologize that it's taken a minute. But we'll be right back, everybody.
The poem is by Taimbe Jess, and the poem is, "When niggas love revolution like they love the bull. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, youth will wear red, black, and green patches over the emblems on their starter jackets. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, brothers will gather regularly at barbershops and corner stops to discuss George Jackson and the Handbook of Revolutionary Warfare and People's War before they go home to take care of their children each night. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, playground basketball courts will become paramilitary training grounds where we learn to shoot guns at the enemy and not baskets for bets. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, we will spend hours and hours watching our children grow into soldiers and not basketball players. When niggas love revolution like they love the bulls, we will know CIA stats, FBI stats, infant mortality stats, police brutality stats, political prisoners and prisoners of war, and literacy training techniques like we know Paxson's shoe size, or Shaq's shoe size, or the way we know Rodman or Pippen's rebounds, or Grant's salary, and all the intimate details of Michael's last gambling spree. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, you will be able to ask any youth on the street, who is Sundiata Okoye? Who is Asada Shakur? Who is Sekou Ojinia? Who is Ruchel McGee and Jonathan Jackson? You will be able to ask, who is Matula Shakur? Who is Queen Mother Moore? They will be able to tell you without skipping a beat. Niggas love revolution like they love the bull. You will go on to ask them about Michael Jordan, and they will say, who? When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, masses of us will go down to tear up Carolina coroner and his office to find out what really happened to James Jordan, instead of waiting on the word of newspapers and sheriff's offices. When niggas love revolution like they love the bulls, we will show up in Washington, D.C. with the Million Man March, with our God and with our guns. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, they will start to seriously wonder why one Negro putting a brown ball through a white net makes more mint money in one season than they will make in an entire lifetime, and do something about it. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, you will see Phil Jackson running up and down an empty court minutes before game time screaming, "Where are my niggas? Where are my niggas? Where are my niggas?" as the niggas leave the stadium to go build liberation schools in their community. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, all niggas will refuse to shoot ball with the president, with or without their dashikis on. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, we'll become associated with the sound that CIA agents, snitches, rats, and agent provocateurs who join our organizations and work against the legitimate aspirations of our people who yearn to breathe free, drug dealers and others will make when they are thrown gracefully face first into open manholes. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, Nike will no longer be able to sell $160 basketball shoes in the black community, because we would rather spend the money on liberation and revolution. Thank you. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, they will love it, they will love it more than chitlins, more than all my children, more than Jerry Carroll, more than permanence, more than Cadillacs and Mercedes-Benz and Rolls-Royces and BMWs cars. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, when niggas love their family like they love the bull, when niggas love their children like they love the bulls, when niggas love to be free like they love the bulls, when niggas love struggle like they love the bulls, when niggas love dignity like they love the bulls, when niggas love niggas like they love the bulls, we will become black people and all the bullshit will hit the fan.
You got to chill, 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 chill.
Relax your mind, let the cost be free, and get down to the size of a PMT. But you should keep quiet while the MC rap, but if you're tired, then go take a nap. Stay awake and watch the show I take, because right now I'm about to shake and bake. D-R-I-C-K is my name, my spell. Things to the clientele, yo, I rock well. I'm not an MC, we talking all that junk about who can be who. Sound like a punk. I just get down and I go for mine. Say check 1-2, 1-2, and run down line.
To the average MC, I'm known as the Terminator, the funky, the maker, who Jack Germany. Destroying a ploy when you're rhyming a boy. Never sweating your girl, why pay? But she's a sweet choice. When I'm on the scene, I always rock the spot. I grab the steel with the crown on top. In the beginning, I like to let my rhymes flow. And at 12, I press cruise control. Sit back and relax, let my rhymes pack. Maintain a breeze while I double relax. Always calm under pressure, no need to act ill. Listen when I tell you, boy, you got to shut up.
Computer information on raps. Like the BRZ, my pieces, I make your toes tap. I format the rhyme step by step. Make them sound deaf to maintain my rep. Prepare to come off in case of a dip. Not worry about a thing, cause we can choose. I can turn up my eyes just by standing still. Make a lady scream and shout while the brothers I kill. Take total control of your body and soul. Pack a nine in my pants when I'm pounding blow.
I'm the P-E-E-M-D-E-E. The one thing I hate is the bite in the sea. When I enter the party, suckers always form a line. Then they ease the way up and try to bite my lines. I did thousands of shows, dish many faces, and deal with them jacks on the one-to-one basis. But every now and then a sucker MC gets courageous, and like an epidemic, it becomes contagious. But never the least, they all R.I.P. Fool was underwear, means rest in peace, cause indeed. Stands for microphone doctor in the capital P, capital M, capital D, E, E. No doubt the chief rocker. Don't like to get ill, but if I have to, I kill. So believe me, boy, you got to chill.
What I'm saying, no, there's no delaying. Don't hesitate to motivate the crowd. I'm not playing, I'm playing, I believe it. You catch my drift, don't try to enter out because I'm just too swift.
How swift?
I'm so swift, and that's a natural fact. I'm like Zorro, I'm up in your back. I don't swing on no ropes or no iron cords. The only weapon is my rapping sword.
Intimidate them scenes with the tone of my vocal throne. When I'm pitching on the microphone, because I'm the funky rhyme maker. MC on the baker, the one that likes to max and relax. When it's time, it should dig them smack. I keep the hands clapping, fingers snapping, feet tapping. When it's time to roll, Uzi patrols, PMD, the mic's my only friend. And through the course of the party, I kill again and again. So if you're thinking about battling, you better come prepared. Come with your shield and your arm again. You got the shit.
Peace and blessings, everybody. This is Queen Ty. peace. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Sign of the Times. This is Queen Tahira. Dr. Jones, I am not finding the recording, so you want to go ahead and just continue to dialogue from where we left off with the similarities between Khalid and Malcolm? Dr. Jones?
I was on mute, Queen. Sorry about that. What if we just go ahead and shift gears a little bit to a different topic, and then we'll return to Khaled next week.
That sounds good.
Okay. Let's go ahead and try and do that. One second. And be able to deal with an issue that came up rather recently and this past weekend, and actually should be one of the things that all of Black America was talking about, and it is the Hillary Clinton, Bill de Blasio joke. I guess you could refer to it in that way if you want to be kind. So let's go ahead and let's deal with that issue. It's one of the things that I wrote about earlier. As a matter of fact, earlier today, I wrote about it for my site and also African American News. So let's get into it. The piece that I'm referring to is titled, I Can See Your True Colors, How a Little Black Joke Reveals So Much About Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party. And the piece reads as follows. This past Saturday, Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton and New York Mayor Bill de Blasio chose to venture into waters that even angels fear to tread by attempting to interject racial humor into a political event. Clinton attempted to playfully chide de Blasio regarding the lateness of his endorsement of her political campaign by remarking, and I quote, it took you long enough, end quote. New York City's mayor, who is married to activist and poet Shirlane McCray, an African American, responded to the presidential hopeful with the following quip, and I quote him, sorry, Hillary, I was running on CP time. After a bit of nervous laughter, Hillary responded, cautious politician time? I've been there. End quote. For those who may be unaware of the cultural minefield that both de Blasio and Clinton have willfully chosen to enter, the term CP time translates into colored people time. A stereotypical inference that colored people, a term not used since the Jim Crow era, are always late. In the wake of this ill-advised and even worse time joke, both Clinton and de Blasio have expressed regret and stated that they in no way intended to offend the African-American community. The primary problem with such a half-assed apology is that it reveals how little regard Democratic Party politicians like Bill de Blasio and Hillary Clinton actually have for an African-American electorate that is not only a primary, but also the main pillar to all of their political aspirations. One has to wonder, what would have been the national action if Hillary Clinton and Bill de Blasio performed the following skit prior to New York's fast-approaching primary election? De Blasio, hey, Hillary. Some of the people want to know why they had to pay so much for admission to this event, but receive such little food. Clinton responds, well, Bill, you should know better than anyone. This is your city, after all. This event was organized by Jews who are notoriously cheap in their financial matters. This is Hymetown, after all. End quote. I'm certain that you agree that Hillary would never state such publicly, as offending the Jewish community in such a manner would most certainly mean the end of her presidential campaign. Although the Jewish community is numerically smaller than the African-American community, their political power, which rests upon financial clout and political organization, guarantees that they are a force to be reckoned with in the political arena. Keep in mind, you will not become president if you have not answered questions regarding your position on Israel. So the question that should be asked is a very simple one. Why would Hillary Clinton and Bill de Blasio feel so comfortable singling out African Americans for this public embarrassment? The answer is simple, because they can. Hillary knows that with a half-hearted apology and a public appearance or two with power-hungry elected black officials, she will once again become the only option for a formidable African-American electorate. Even with the New York primary being approximately a week away, there is no doubt that black New Yorkers will show out in droves to support Hillary Clinton. I am certain that her only real concern is, will they be there on time? Because you know how niggas do. If not, ask de Blasio and Clinton about CP time. Trust me when I say that they will know exactly what you are asking them about. And that's the piece right there, Quentin.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Jones. Great piece. And right on point, as usual. For some reason, we seem to think Hillary is the new black, like folks got hoodwinked into believing that Bill Clinton was somehow given a pass and a black card. And, you know, I did hear the statement by Hillary and was not surprised at all, because she is a politician. And how are we getting hoodwinked into, I guess, aligning ourselves with folks who are only shining pretty on the surface is beyond me. So I think your point is well taken and well understood.
You know, the thing for me is that it is way late in the day, and we've talked about this repeatedly, for people to be uninformed about, first of all, what politics are and what political matters actually matter. And to see our people continually falling for the same, and I call it the Clinton boogie, you know, before it was Bill with his saxophone. Today, it's Hillary showing up to black events and evoking the memories of our ancestors as if she's some type of clairvoyant. And black folk just melt. They just get misty-eyed. They fall, you know, fall apart. Oh, my God. You know, she mentioned Maya Angelou. She understands. Totally revealing, number one, a lack of intelligence, and number two, any semblance of a lack of an understanding of what politics is actually for. You know, this is, as Chairman Fred Hampton said, you know, politics is nothing but war without bloodshed. We're at war, and we're battling for resources. We're battling for access to resources and what have you. And it is treasonous and traitorous for our quote-unquote black elected officials, black pastors, and what have you, to personally anoint not just Hillary, but any politician as the chosen one without demanding to see what it is they're going to do for us. I could care less if it's Hillary, if it's Sanders, if it's Trump, as long as we have called them before the church and have got them to pledge what it is that they're going to give to us for these millions of votes that we're going to deliver to them. You know, we behave as if, number one, we're not a political force, and nothing could be further from the truth. We delivered the White House for Clinton twice and definitely for Barack Hussein Obama. And we're willing and we're prepared to do it twice again, most likely for Hillary Clinton. My question mm-hmm. becomes, what does that cost? At what cost does that come? And the truth of the matter is that it's sad that Hillary and really any Democratic Party candidate knows that they don't even have to address us anymore because our votes are in their pocket already.
Uh-huh.
Black leaders should be ashamed that they sell us out so cheaply. Not only are they not pledging to do anything, but black leadership is not even asking, requesting, let alone demanding that you do this. And you do this before you even step into the Oval Office. We're not falling for that game. However, when you're politically disorganized, you're lackadaisical, and as you heard me say thousands of times probably, when our jump-off point, our springboard for even walking out the house to assemble with other African Americans is predicated and resting upon self-hatred, we ain't going nowhere. And that's a truly, 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 truly unfortunate situation. The way that our people can express and show their hatred and their anger for their own, while those who have historically done them tremendous damage get away scot-free from their vengeance and their wrath, is in many ways the height of lunacy. You know, I feel often being an African-American and trying to uplift our people mentally, I feel like Pearl Cleage has this great title to one of her books, and it is What Looks Like Normal on a Crazy Day. And it's like, come on now. You guys are elected officials, and you don't want to lead the charge to demand for anything. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised that regardless of who gets in, that we're going to get the short end of the stick. We're going to get the leftovers, if there are any that are left over in this nation, especially when you're talking about economically. And in regards to jobs, is ravenous. I'm not convinced there'll be anything that's left over. And I yield with that, Queen.
You know, Dr. Jones, what is our platform anymore? Because we're so divided, even as a group of people. You know, what would our demands be on a political format? You know, what other than, you know, using the key phrases, mass incarceration, over-prosecution, things like that, you know, we have to even get past that stage because those are key words, you know, and we know how folks use language and things like that to convince us that they're going to do the right thing, which they never do. But so what is our platform anymore in 2016? Do we even have one, or do we need to be creating one from scratch?
No, I definitely don't think that we need to create one from scratch, but I think that a good step forward would be maybe a period of self-healing so that we can get this angst and this hatred that we got for one another other off of us. But addressing your question directly, I don't believe that we have any real understanding of which way we should be going. And in many ways, almost on a daily basis, I feel myself drifting further and further and further away from anything that has to deal with the left. Because I think that we are fooling ourselves, and maybe we need to fooling ourselves in regards to receiving any type of governmental help. And I'm one of those who believes that the problems facing urban America are not going to be solved unless we institute a Marshall Plan. However,
mm-hmm.
I think that in many ways, when we're talking about the creation of an agenda, of a platform, I think that we need to move back to basics. And although I know that most people would be offended and would disagree, because it's emanating from an individual who has been somewhat of a polarizing figure when you look at black social movements and you look at even a religious base with the majority of African Americans being quote-unquote Christians, it would be the program of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Very simple program. of black folk, black men, marrying black women, producing black children, starting their own businesses, and circulating the dollar amongst ourselves, not concerning ourselves even with local, state, or even national politics. I think that we're so far gone and so far behind that in many ways we need to step away for a little while and get our homes in order, get our personal lives in order. Because any way that you want to look at it and you want to deal with it, it's black women who are receiving the lion's share of abortions. It is black women who are raising their children alone. You know, those are all fundamental building block things. One of the things that we often, you know, we talk about revolution, we talk about this, we talk about that, but it's revolutionary nowadays when you look at the present state of black America to find a monogamous, stable, two-parent black household that are happy. You know, that might be where our platform needs to start. Let's just get happy. And I yield with that.
Well, I definitely agree. It has to start with our relationship with one another. And, you know, when we speak on relationship building and relationships, I think we have a tendency to still have that mindset that when we speak on relationships, that it speaks on some sort of personal or sexual attraction towards each other. I think that that has held us back.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, one of the things that I'm consistently explaining to people is what my concept of love is. You know, I don't love purely from an emotional position. I love from a position of honor, a position of almost duty, because I recognize that there are some mornings when I wake up where I don't even like myself. And if I go ahead and the only thing that is supporting my marriage is predicated upon a feeling, a thought, an emotion, as soon as my emotions change, then I can abandon this. And it's those type of lessons and those types of understandings that I think that need to come back into fashion within our community. Because let's face facts, we have gotten it wrong. And if we're not careful, and this is sort of my running thing, and I hate to say that I believe that I'll be alive to see this, I believe that we're heading towards a situation where we're going to have at least two, if not three, four, five, different distinct black populations. We're going to have the haves and the have-nots. We're going to have those who are ratchet. We're going to have those who are maybe have-nots but are hardworking and on their way up. We're going to have those who are the quote-unquote black elite who have nothing, and I mean nothing, no sympathy, and they have nothing to do with quote-unquote non-elite black folk. I know that some people are saying, well, we had the Boulé here already. The Boulé won't have anything based upon these black folk that I think are coming.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be raised in a black community. They're going to be well-educated. They're going to be indoctrinated and convinced to get ahead in America by any means necessary, including ostracizing and cutting the throat of your own. Because they are going to grow up in a world where the only thing that matters is money. And they're going to pursue it. And they're going to be very, very, very successful in pursuing it. And what's going to go along with that mindset is, if I made it, how come you didn't? And they are going to totally, because I hear this already, the discounting among African-American elites, they still will recognize racism and say, yeah, racism is still a problem. But there's another analysis and understanding where they are saying, but racism isn't enough to keep us down.
Mm-hmm.
And hidden in that is, quite simply, if you are down, if you are not financially successful, that is a personal flaw that you need to check out, because the genesis is inside of you. And that's where I truly believe that we are heading. Unfortunate, but true.
Yeah. I mean, we see examples of that now, where there's a disconnect. And you know, Dr. Jones, I know that there's a real effort to, you know, have the same mindset, Pan-Africanist mindset, that we can do for self and we can be self-sufficient and things like that. And I do believe that we can, and we have the potential to be. But unless there's some sort of bond, you know, that we all see as us having in common, we're just going to keep on, you know, hitting and missing, and having small victories when, you know, you and I both know, and anybody that's listening knows how intelligent we are and how much capacity we have to build. So are those who are looking at this as a black thing on the wrong path anymore? Are we looking at, you know, as Minister Farrakhan has done, allowing other nationalities in our ranks just to guarantee that we can survive the culling that's taking place? You know, are we lining ourselves up with each other out of ignorance?
You know, it hurts me to say that I truly do now, having lived as long as I have and had the experiences I have in studying the history of our people. I believe that we have made, those of us who have been so focused upon race. I know you remember, what was the movie about the three rappers? Had Chris Rock in it, had Alan Payne in it. And one of the characters, the movie's name eludes me right now, but one of the characters was a black nationalist rapper, and he would say, "I'm black, and I'm black, and I'm black and a black, and I'm black, y'all, because I'm black, y'all, and I'm black." I believe that mode is now outdated.
I think you hit the mute button, Dr. Jones. Okay, we've lost Dr. Jones, everybody. I apologize. We seem to be having a lot of technical difficulty tonight. And I'm wondering, like, we must be doing something really right for this stuff to be actually so tonight. Please,
can
Dr.
you hear
Jones.
Me now? Okay.
Yes, sir.
What I was saying is quite simply that maybe we have gotten it wrong by focusing so much upon race, upon blackness. Maybe we should have done what the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense should have done, which is not to allow anyone, not to allow the entire qualification for being down with us to be your skin color. We need to be a little more selective in regards to who we're going to work with. And it's unfortunate, but we can never seem to get past the what is for me the first rule when dealing with African Americans, and it is enter into it with a clear understanding that black folk hate themselves and they will do whatever they can to bring harm to one another. They'll express that self-hatred upon you. Even when, you know, and it's usually feast or famine in regards to those people. You have this unmistakable rivalry that occurs over the darndest things. You know, just yesterday I wrote a piece that grew out of me marketing my book. And what I attempted to do was to get every black bookstore that was still in existence and to go ahead and mail out literature to them to notify them about the book, see if they would stock the book in their store. Well, what grew out of that was the realization that over the last, I would say, 5 years, we've lost 80% of our black bookstores. The present count is at 56, barely one black bookstore per state that is still in existence. So I wrote this piece titled, I Guess That What They Say Is True. If you want to keep something away from Negroes, put it in a book. And in the piece, what I did was I talked about how I first fell in love with reading how it was truly a thrilling thing for me. We didn't have a black bookstore where I was from, Mansfield, Ohio, but my mother would take me to the public library, and I would be able to get books from there. And I can tell you on the card catalog, E185 is where the African-American books were at. So I would always just run to that section. And how much I wanted to have that be the experience of black children as they're growing older to this day. However, with us losing these bookstores, it's not going to be possible and what have you. And what I decided to do was to list all of the black bookstores that had closed down. And I'll actually read you what it is that I wrote on this little segment. And this is what it says. This list was compiled by the African American Literature Book Club. Please peruse this list for a black bookstore that used to be in your community. Now, clearly that means it doesn't exist anymore, correct? If it used to be in your bookstore. Well, I got this somewhat angry communication from a sister who is actually the organizer. She owns a bookstore here, a black bookstore here, but she's the organizer of the largest national book festival in the South. And she sends this nasty communication that says quite simply that my list is obsolete, that I needed to do more research, that the list is dated, and the vast majority, if not all of the books that I have listed, all the bookstores I've listed have been closed down and blah, blah, and goes on and on and on and on. And I just sent back a simple communication of thanking her for, you know, I recognize her name and that, you know, I was going to participate in the book festival and what have you. And then the point of you obviously did not read the article. It's clearly saying bookstores that used to be there, meaning they are closed now. However, there is in many ways no civil discourse amongst our people. I don't care if you're talking about apparently now booksellers. I don't care if you're talking about black nationalist organizations. There is a gross lack of civility amongst the majority of our people, and it is the reason why, in many ways, I've kind of divested myself from being linked up with our people so significantly anymore, because invariably, nothing gets done. And I think there's a host of reasons, depending upon the situation, why nothing gets done, so I choose to go off and do it on my own. And I've been very successful doing it that way. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashe, Dr. Jones, it's been a learning curve for me, too, going through that. Being raised in a suburban environment, moving to the inner city, experiencing grassroots activism, and then watching that grassroots activism basically be sold out and bought and purchased. As if, you know, that slave mentality is so deeply rooted, I don't even know if we even recognize it for what it truly, truly is anymore. So, you know, you couple that with, you know, the constant dumbing down for the past, I guess, since Brown versus the Board of Education, we've had a certain amount of detriment happen with our public school system. You know, we've, again, fallen for the okey-doke. That these people were educating our children and that our children were not being educated because they didn't want to learn. They needed to be medicated. There's all kinds of things, like you said, that come into play. I speaking from personal experience, putting 20 plus years into Over the Rhine in an urban environment on, you know, the sweat equity of volunteers and the people who believed in a broader mission. That we weren't going to sell out to the state or to the government per se, and still have a flourishing and thriving community. Well, when it came time to shit or get off the pot. I was the only one standing there. You know, and you know, there are black activists, there are white activists, there are grassroots activists that come in all kinds of nationalities. But often when it comes time to step up to the plate, only the people who are the most outspoken, i.e., you know, as Brother Khalid, as Brother Malcolm, as, you know, others have, Robert Williams, I'm just learning more about him and the fight that he had to fight to survive and end up leaving the States to find his own success, you know, and to be shut out from jobs and things like that. I mean, this the rabbit hole is deep, Dr. Jones. The rabbit hole is deep, but it's not. We're not digging. We're still trying to figure out our way through someone else's rabbit hole, and that has never worked, and it's never going to work. And I do agree with you to an extent that it's going to take a collaborative effort. It's going to take a unifying and universal effort for this thing to change. But we also, you know, I can't help but hear, you know, Malcolm and Brother Khalid speaking of the fact that you can't trust those who have shown you who they are. You know, they've shown you their tendency to use us and to abuse us, to manipulate and to take advantage. And, you know, Dr. Joy talks about it goes back to, you know, how we were all brought to this earth in the first place. A certain amount of survival skills came equipped with them as they, I guess, evolved into what we see now. Whereas we were placed in a habitat that allowed us to flourish on our own time, i.e. going back to your example of CP time. So, I mean, you know, if we're looking at reestablishing relationships, if we're looking at rebuilding the trust, if we're looking at operating from a standpoint of love and mutual respect, are we going to be able to do both at the same time, love ourselves and, you know, quote unquote, love our enemies, you know, and still get something done? I just don't know. I'm asking you, what do you think?
No, no, not at all. I mean, I think that we have a formidable task ahead of us, even loving our own people, because we're going to have to siphon through them and see who's friend and who's enemy right there. I just, the whole thing is so convoluted, so complex. So, you know, so many pieces that are interlocking and what have you. And then what makes matters worse is quite simply that when you have a situation where you have a tenable solution and black folk don't show up to the game, even then, mm-hmm. they become very scarce. They run away. They're afraid and what have you. And one has to, you know, you have to take your hat off to figures like Malcolm, to Garvey, you know, to these brothers who went before us, because they stayed the course their entire lives. And unfortunately, you know, we can argue about this. You know, it was that staying of the course that went ahead and cost them, you know, their lifestyle and their lives. You know, and so much of it, and this is really getting me to the point where I find myself talking less and less to people and focusing upon writing more and more. It is quite simply that I'm sick and tired of the rhetoric. With the production of nothing, they're producing nothing. They're talking loud. They're modern day rappers, I would argue. Many of the so-called conscious community, and so much of what's being talked about is historically incorrect, uninformed. However, they know a little bit more than a person that's listening to them, and this half truth that they're advancing is going to be propagated and shared, and before long, you know, we don't even have an element of the truth involved in even their analysis. But back to, you know, your original question, I don't believe that it's easy to I don't believe that we're going to get there through loving everyone, caring for everyone, considering everyone. I think that it may very well be time that we go ahead and those of us who truly have a connection to one another and want to build something significant, be about the business of building that, because we're spending too much time trying to corral in. It's almost as if we're trying to corral in sheep, and we're spending so much time chasing after them that we never move anywhere, trying to keep them from themselves. And I'm kind of the mindset now of let them go out and let them bump their heads. Let them get, quote-unquote, slaughtered. Then they'll come back with some humility and maybe be willing to listen and understand something. And I yield with that.
Ashe, we're almost to the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Sign of the Times Tuesdays with Dr. James Jones and Queen Tahira. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Put this on YouTube.
Yeah.
You heard this, dude.
And you know this, man.
I believe our greatest need as a people is to educate our youth. I believe that we need to move from all of the individuals and groups who are doing great things in their communities to uplift kids through better education, but we need to move from fragmentation to consolidation to coalition. They are simply products that help to create awareness.
Anytime you can put a symbol on a t-shirt that symbolizes unity, that's what we're doing.
Something for people to rally around. I use the colors of red, black, and green to reconnect African-American youth with their culture. How do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been and what you've been through as a people? At best, we are strongest together. And in that sense, I am driven and passionate about talking to as many people and groups all over this country who, again, want to help to maximize the mission, want to help to move forward our kids with better educational opportunities.
Welcome back to Sign of the Times, everyone. Welcome back, Dr. Jones.
All right, glad to be welcome back.
All right, Dr. Jones. Okay, so let's look at this from the educational standpoint. Okay, if we've got a lot of people arriving at the conversation at different levels, we've built a certain amount of camaraderie with everyday people. We've built a certain amount of camaraderie with folks who are confined citizens. We've built a certain amount of camaraderie with those who are spiritual beings. And, you know, we have folks like you at the table who provide, I guess, the credentials, if you will, to help us take our conversations where they need to go. So looking at some of the need for literacy, to improve our literacy, to improve the compassion and trust and things like that in our communities, are there any books that stick out in your mind that would be helpful in that process to help, you know, I guess, mend this bridge, if you will?
Okay, mend the bridge between whom?
Us as a group of people, us being able to get to the next level where we can find some commonality where we can and be able to, you know, build with one another. What the things that have a tendency to hold us back, are there some things that we should be looking at educationally that would help us, you know, mend and heal?
You know, I think that a serious engagement with the classics, the classic literature, you know, every piece and every parcel of classic literature that one could get their hands on. But I think that a bigger thing that would help us, well, that would help us with the classic literature, is for people to find a suitable, quote-unquote, mentor who is willing to go ahead and guide them through some of these classic pieces. Without that, Lord only knows what people are going to ultimately end up with. And that's one of the scariest things of all. It's sort of I can remember my pastor, Pastor Dr. Johnny R. Heckert. Pastor Heckert always saying, you know, and he was talking within the context of Bible study. He said, think about it this way. When you join a gym, you don't just go in there and jump on some equipment and start doing some movements and you don't know what you're doing. No, you hire a trainer who can show you the ropes. And once you get up to a certain level, then you're able to work out on your own. Well, knowledge is in many ways the exact same way and same thing. But the overarching and larger question, I don't know how to get black folk to love themselves. And that's a very difficult thing. All I can say is exposing them to the classics, and you hope that something catches, you know, and that they're able to begin a process of introspection, a process of prayer, a process of even meditation that will allow them to go ahead and ascend on a host of different levels. But reading is fundamental. Reading is so essential. And one of the things that, you know, that really bothered me about, and this actually just happened to me twice in the last week. One of them is the sort of thing that was sent from the sister who's in charge of the National Black Book Festival and what have you. It's very clear to me that she did not read the piece. And then I had another interaction with a white gentleman who posted something about one of my stories on African-American news and issues. And someone asked him why. Why did he feel the way that he did? And he did something that very few people, I think, would have the courage to do. He actually admitted that he hadn't even read the piece. And them asking him why forced him to go and read it, and then he came back and said, yo, you know what, this was actually really well written. I thought it was going to be one of these hate whitey pieces. And I think that in those two stories, we have one of the things that we need to do, and it is quite simply read. Read and comprehend, because without that, we, you know, where are we going? We can't go anywhere without reading and comprehension. And I yield with that.
Ashay. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and probably wrap up a little bit early tonight, considering we've had a technical difficulty with the audio. But Dr. Jones, you know, the Brothers of the Sun have talked about, you know, trying to explore some education, looking at how to build this universal peace and unity movement. You know, and I guess if you had to look at the next few weeks, taking us up to May, I want to continue to look at these examples, Dr. Jones, because, you know, we've all heard the saying, if you don't learn from your past, you're bound to repeat it. And I'm just afraid that we're going to continue to repeat the things of the past. So if I could get maybe some suggestions from you on some books and, or, you know, as we've done with the documentaries, and just lay out, you know, for the next maybe 2 or 3 weeks, some books that would help, I guess, open our mind's eye a little more so we can have the conversations beyond Sign of the Times that we need to keep having. In order to help us heal and to build more unity. So can you recommend some documentaries or readings for us for the next couple of weeks?
Okay, I would definitely say, and I'll stay away from what would be the obvious text. And, of course, the obvious text is the autobiography of Malcolm X. I believe that every black man, woman, and child should read that book. Without a doubt. Beyond that, I look at, and these are some of my favorites, anything by Jay California Cooper is absolutely positively dope. I just say that she's an incredible writer. But I also lean towards W.E.B. Du Bois' The Souls of Black Folk. That's another great book. The quintessential book for African-American males, if they really are interested in reading something that is cerebral and pretty much, I guess, people would refer to it as deep, it would be Richard Wright's Native Son, which is an incredible, incredible, incredible book. The Diary of an Ex-Colored Man is another incredible book about a brother who is issued a challenge from a white gentleman who basically says, if I were to give you the life of a white man, you would never want to go back to being a Negro. And the brother is actually fair enough, skin-wise, that he's able to actually do that. What else would be very, very good? Gloria Naylor's book, Mama Day, is an incredible book that really talks about culture and how these black folk on this island are doing so very, very well. It's South Carolina Sea Islands. They're doing so well, but their young people want to go across the bridge and deal with the quote-unquote majority culture, and it proves to be disastrous for them. We can never forget Carter G. Woodson's The Miseducation of the Negro. That's essential reading. What else? I would say Nathan McCall's books, Makes Me Want to Holler, is another phenomenal book. Booker T. Washington's Up from Slavery is phenomenal. I think that, and I'll throw myself in there, I believe that my book on Foolish Floyd is going to be a very interesting way for our people to deal with contemporary political issues in a what I would term a very appetizing way for them. Who else is out there? Asada. Okay, we can never forget Asada's story. Claude Brown, Man Child in the Promised Land, anything by James Baldwin. My favorite Baldwin book, though, is The Price of the Ticket, which is a collection of his essays and what have you. What else did we put out there? What else would be appealing to the brothers that would definitely interest them? I would actually say, and this is a kind of a hard book to get at times, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's Message to the Black Man is definitely one that should be engaged. And other figures that the Panther book, Seize the Time. But I think my book is better than Seize the Time, Creating Revolution as They Advance, because it gives a whole overview of the Panthers, using the Panthers' voices. What else would I recommend for African-American men? I would say anything by Jawanza Kanjuku. Anything, countering the conspiracy to destroy black boys is a great one. We already talked about Malcolm, Richard Wright, Native Son, Black Boy, also by Richard Wright, is a phenomenal, phenomenal book. What else would specifically be dealing? Earl of, I want to say it's Black Men Obsolete, Endangered Obsolete, something like that. Who's a brother that did the Black Men book? I'm going to look it up real quick. I want to say Earl of Fari Hutchinson, but I know it's not him. Haki Madubuike is another brother who's bonkers in regards to what it is he's writing. James Baldwin's book, The Fire Next Time, it serves as the template for Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me. That's a great book. For black men, also The Invisible Man, which is a very interesting story about people actually not seeing black men when they see them. What they're seeing are their stereotypes, their fears, and their caricatures of black men. Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, essential reading. Talking about the prison industrial complex and how African-American men, once they are put inside of that system, are in many ways never able to re-enter legitimate mainstream economy as far as getting a job. Richard Major's book, The Cool Pose, is a phenomenal, phenomenal book about black manhood in America. That would be a starting point. I can think about it and sit down and think about it and come up with an even more exhaustive list. One of the things that I think we need to have a private conversation about is how we can arrange working, in this regard with some of the brothers who are behind bars. What can we do to go ahead and build on, what we need to build on? Because I know that you sent me a communication probably 2-3 weeks ago regarding that, and it's something that I don't know if I answered or not, but it's something that I'm 100% willing to do and definitely behind 100%. So let's go ahead and build and make it happen.
All right, that sounds good to me. The brothers are listening. Let's get together, everybody, and try to make this happen. And the sisters, the goddesses, can get together, too, and come up with some strategies on some literature. As always, Dr. Jones, it's a pleasure and an honor to have you at the table here on Sign of the Times. I learn a lot from you, and I hope that the listeners learn, at least as much as I do, if not more. Again, I always appreciate your time and commitment here.
Likewise. Always an honor. Always an honor. I look forward to Tuesday, most definitely. Because as you know, since I ain't working, every day is about the same to me. So Tuesday and Wednesday are the days that I actually have something to do concrete. So love being here.
Ashe. Well, let's get a conversation going with Brother Dati and Kinetic and Brother Ray, and let's make some things happen. And again, we will see you all tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Sign of the Times. We're probably going to be having a listen-in session because I think that's important right now, and I do believe that the Creator gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason. So let's continue to build. Let's continue to thrive, and let's continue to strive. And thank you again, Dr. Jones. We will see you all tomorrow night at 6 o'clock here on Sign of the Times. Talk to you then. Peace.
Can I kick it? Well, I'm gone. can I kick it? To all the people who can quest like a tribe does. Before this, did you really know what I was? Comprehend to the track force, why? Cause getting mentions on the tip of the vibe buzz. Rock and roll to the beat of the funk fuzz. Wipe your feet really good on the rhythm rug. If you feel the urge to freak, do the jitterbug. Come and spread your arms if you really need a hug. Afrocentric living is a big shrug. Our life's filled with, that's what I love. A lower plateau is what we're above. If you diss us, we won't even think of. We'll nip of the dog and give a big shove. This rhythm really fits like a snug glove. Like a box of positives, it's a plus love. As the trial flies high like a dove.